This is the Amp Hour Podcast. Released March 12th, 2023. Episode 623. Artisanal Crystals.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Well, I'm still here for today.
You are still here. Yeah. I thought you were away this week.
Yeah, no, I think that was because we got our wires crossed because I recorded with my coworker Mike last week and talked about how I was busy working on demos, which I continue to be busy, but I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not just the jetway. It's not just the airplane at the end of the jetway. It's actually, I'm feeling better about my demo, so that's a good feeling.
Excellent. So it's all coming together last minute scramble for the trade show?
A lot of last minute scramble, yeah. You know, and just like the everything else too, you know, just travel and promotional materials, all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. By the time people hear this, I will probably be in Germany, so.
Right. Are you shipping stuff before you go, or are you going to hand carry it?
No, hand carry it. And this is, you remember, I don't know if you remember it, but last year my luggage was lost on the way there.
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. When I went to Embedded World last year, and that was in June, I show up in Frankfurt, which is about a two-hour train ride away from Nuremberg. And no luggage, not going to be there. They have no idea where it was. And so it wasn't like I can just like pop back up to the airport because it was a two-hour train ride.
Right.
And it didn't actually matter because the entire time I was there, my suitcase did not get there. I got my suitcase back when I got back to the U.S. It followed me about 2 weeks behind me. So
was there any gear in there?
There was, yeah. There was some recording gear, and there was like a bunch of promotional materials.
Right.
Most of the stuff was hand carried because I was neurotic about a lot of it. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I don't think it's supposed to be in the hold anyways, right? If you're like, got batteries and stuff, so.
Nah.
The important stuff made it.
Did I tell you about my Altium road trip once?
I don't think so. Maybe?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, we manufactured for the trade show. I can't remember, you know, it was a Silicon Valley trade show. I can't remember which one it was. Mm-hmm. There's too many of them.
Not anymore.
Embedded
Systems Conference was the one back then.
Embedded Systems Conference. Yeah, maybe it was that. I don't know. So we were down at the Altium headquarters down in San Diego.
And La Jolla.
And we had, like, we manufactured all these prototype cases, and they were like delicate handmade fiberglass cases because there was no 3D printing stuff back then. You know, it wasn't really, you know. So these were all like hand, like very delicate things, and they'd just been hand spray painted and everything.
They looked
like finished cases, but they were delicate ass.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we had like dozens of these things.
Yep.
And we thought, how are we going to get these to the trade show up in, you know, we've got to go all the way up the coast. And we went, these are not going to survive a plane trip, right? These are, we can't just give these to a cute courier person. It's just like, it's not going to happen. So, all right, let's get
in the car.
Let's hire a van.
Nice, nice.
And myself and one of the guys at Altium, we hired this van and we drove it all the way up, road trip, and we took the scenic route up the coast from San Diego right up to Silicon Valley. And we were that paranoid that they would have, like, because we would have had nothing to show, and the whole show was about showing off this new, you know, modular hardware product that we had. So,
you know, you wonder if the same safety stuff kind of applies to gear as it does to people, right? You know, it's like people always think it's going to be safer to drive, but it's actually like statistically less safe.
Statistically less safe, right?
Yeah, right. But is it statistically less safe for gear than your prototypes?
No. Nope. I only trust myself to carry delicate gear like that. Yeah.
I think one thing is like the agency of it as well. It's like, hey, look. If there's one person that's going to break, it's going to be me, goddammit.
and then once I had to hand carry to Singapore, had to hand carry these custom tested crystal oscillators, right? These were hand picked, hand tested, hand selected, handcrafted.
The finest, artisanal
grey beard crystal oscillators, right? modules. They were MCXOs, so they were a microcontroller based.
You know, I'm kind of a crystal oscillator hipster. You know, you may not have heard about them, but yeah.
Oh boy, yes. So yes, I had to carry these artisanal crystals and hand carry them in, like, you know, shock absorbent. Like I made like a custom box for them with custom shock absorbing because you couldn't shock them. Right, because I've talked about this before. A lot of my research I've done on had the shock response of the physical shock response of crystals and how it resets the drift characteristics of crystals.
Yeah, right.
So, like, yeah, like I had to keep these under a certain number of G's, right? Yep. So I had to handcraft a box, and then I get busted by customs. And
it looks like you're smuggling.
I got to Singapore.
Right?
Oh yeah, like yeah, they X-rayed these things, and there's like these 12 little metal boxes that appeared in. You know, they were like nice, floating there inside this.
And Dave's like, "What the? You think the ones in the box are bad? You should see the ones that I'm carrying on my person."
So and someone there didn't speak English very well. Which was surprising because it was Singapore and Singlish is there, you know, but I don't know.
Right.
So I don't know where they were from. But anyway, trying to explain to a person who's carrying like a submachine gun, they literally have it slung in front of them. Right.
Yeah.
And they're unpacking my box. And what is this? And I'm trying to explain how it, you know, it's a clock. It goes tick tock. Like,
See, that's the traditional way that you get demonetized for the BOMB word is you lose all your money because you're dead.
Right. Yes. You say to the guy with the submachine gun, the paranoid guy with the submachine gun, tick tock, tick tock.
Yeah.
Tick-tock.
Right. Right.
It's like,
oh my God, Dave.
Oh God. Yes. Somehow I survived that encounter.
That's good. And you know, that's great. That actually really puts my mind at ease. Way lower stakes. Way. I thought a little, you know, battery pouch was going to be a problem, but
like
yours.
Yep.
I was considering, I do have an old carry case, like a silver briefcase. And I was kind of like relishing the idea of like having like a silver briefcase.
Chaining it to your wrist.
It's your wrist. Right. Of course. Yeah. You got to do that. Yeah.
Yep. That'd be great.
Yeah. I don't think I'm that risky though. I think I'd rather just put it in my bag, my normal bag. Like it feels like that like draws more attention to it unnecessarily. And it'll be fine.
That reminds me of the time I had to defuse a bomb inside a briefcase in a stairwell of an abandoned car park.
Well, there's a story.
I could explain that, but I won't. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. No link?
And
no
I'm
video
not
links?
Kidding.
Nothing? Okay.
I just leave it at that. True story.
Okay.
True story.
Right. Yep. Right, cool. Well, in service of prototypes, I had a question for you because I ordered 5 modules and I blew up 2 of them immediately today. And I thought, you know, this is good fodder for the amp hour because I'm actually not certain what happened.
What did you blow up?
I had some theories though. Okay. So here's the backstory. These boxes that I'm making, they're battery powered. They're off a LiPo battery pack, you know, 3.7 nominal. And there's a buck boost converter in there. And really, I'm just running everything off 3.3. Okay, nothing fancy there. But I have an expansion module that basically plugs in this particulate sensor. And what I noticed was like when I had it all plugged together and I was running off USB, no problem. I unplugged the USB and then the whole thing just doesn't boot. And I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And it turns out that the firmware is waiting for the particulate sensor to come up. But because when it's not plugged into USB, there's no 5 volts that gets passed through to the particulate sensor and it needs 5 volts. Okay, fine. So that's totally solvable, right? So I ordered these off the shelf, Amazon, next day, piece of crap, boost little modules, right? It's like probably, it's like less than 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters, like really, really small modules. Maybe less than 5 by 5.
10 centimeters, that's a lot.
Yeah, probably like 5 by 5.
Power module.
Yeah, 5 by 5. And
still large, quite frankly.
But it's like a, you know, wire to board kind of thing. It's not like I'm soldering this down anywhere. Like I'm soldering wires to it. I'm not like soldering it onto anything else.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So am I getting that right? Maybe. Yeah, 5 by 5. That sounds about right. Let's go with that. And okay, so now I have this little thing, but before I put it into my unit, I wanted to test it. So I get out my source measure unit. I get out my digital load and basically I run some wires to it. And basically, I can send you the link here so you can see it. Yes, I actually don't know what the part is. Maybe good, maybe bad. But basically,
that is not 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters, dude.
You know, Dave, I don't do metric. I do freedom units.
No kidding. That is barely an inch by an inch, dude.
5 centimeters.
5 centimeters is 2 inches by 2 inches.
Oh, yeah. I was way off. I was thinking millimeters. Yeah. Yeah, it's like more like 10 millimeters by 10 millimeters. Yeah, is that right? Maybe a little bit more?
Yeah. Okay. It's like, that's 10, 12 by 12, 10 by 10, 12 by 12 millimeters.
10 by 10 sounds right. Okay. Yeah. So much smaller. There we go. See, I should have left the link. That would have been helpful.
Exactly.
Okay. I was mostly going off of this thing is available on Amazon, and I don't really care what it does because I'm going to just test its behavior.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So I wire it up. There's a V in, there's a common ground, and there's a V out. Very, very simple. It's supposed to take from 5 volts all the way down to 0.8 volts, I think it says, 0.9 volts, and then it'll boost it up to 5 volts, like a standard boost there. Unshielded inductor, whatever. So I hook up my source measure unit, I hook up my active load, and I program the active load for, I think, like 50 milliamps, right? So I'm going to try and draw 50 milliamps out of this thing. And I program the source measure unit to source 3.3 volts because that's my expected voltage that's the rail.
Why
did
you use a source measure unit instead of a power supply?
That's a good question. And then I set the compliance on the source, because like, honestly, I start with the source measure unit. That's usually where I start for things.
Ah, right. Okay. Well, I've got a segue with this later. You have to remind me.
Sure. Okay. And so I set it like compliance at like 300 milliamps on the source measure unit. And I turn it on. And I also had already turned on the active load. So the active load was already there. And it's not a very good active load. It's one of the Siglent ones. And like sometimes it doesn't come up. Like sometimes when I turn it on, like it's already, it like doesn't talk to the ADC. So it's not like super high quality.
Right.
It was a budget play. And so I turn this thing on and I just start seeing like current shoot through to the active load. Like the source measure unit's railed at 300 milliamps. Mm. The active load is saying that it's saying that there's no voltage there basically. So it's just like shorting and going back out to the source measure unit. I don't know what's happening at that point that it would be that shorting through this boost converter, right? I figure that most of the boosts that I see, it's basically you're going through a inductor, you're snapping it off so that then you get a spike through that inductor voltage and you can basically boost, that's how you boost it back up, right? And then it stores it in a capacitor. There's only like 3 components on this thing. There's 4 or 5 components.
Yeah,
there's a
5,
inductor, diode, 2 caps, and the actual switcher itself, a 4-pin switcher. So like nothing fancy here. And so my assumption is that something happened when I turned on the source measure unit.
Right.
But I have no idea what it was.
So you actually blew these little modules.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really weird. So then like any...
All of them?
No, two out of the 5 before I wiped
out. 2 out of the 5 before you... Yeah, so did you realize what was causing it or what?
Well, that's the thing. So then I started like being like, you know, so I thought, well, maybe these things were just bad, right? Just like, I went and read the reviews again. I'm like, yeah, some people had some problems, but you know, that's a very bad measure there.
Well, I have some problems with a board with 5 parts on it that's supposed to be just a, that
exactly.
has one There's job, right?
I right, mean, exactly. And so then like, I also, so another thing I did is I took it off the active load, of course, and then I just put it into a DMM. And yes, when I do that, then there's no load and I see 5 volts there. I'm like, okay, well maybe I'm trying to source too much current. So I step the current on the active load all the way down to like 10 milliamps, right?
Right.
But still this thing is, so that was still on the first unit. And even at 10 milliamps, I see the source measure unit is sourcing 300 milliamps through this thing.
Whoa.
There's no voltage, right? So it's just shooting right through there.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's bad. Then I replaced it with the second one. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to start a little bit different here. Then I changed it over to, I was like, okay, well maybe I can get like, switch to in the active load, switch to constant resistance mode, right? So now I'm going to program in 10 ohms and see if I can just see if that's something different there.
Constant resistance mode is tricky though. I have actually killed benchtop power supplies with a constant resistance mode. It was one of my tests back in the old days for loads, for actual power supplies. So
I think you're getting at what I think what's happening I'll get to the resolution here in a second, which is very boring. I think what was happening was two things. One, I had the active load on when I also switched on the source measure unit, which I think was part of the problem.
Right.
And then the other thing is basically because it's two active sources,
yep,
they're just fighting each other like crazy, right? They're just like, oh, I'm going to go up. Well, I'm going to go up. No, I'm going to go down. I'm going to go down. So I think basically
it's a response.
The source measure was oscillating like crazy and this little piece of crap.
Yeah, it just couldn't handle it. And then it just, it went up.
So it just swung too high, right? So now it's driving an inductor. It gets out of control. It's control loop and the voltage gets too high and it probably popped the FET on it or something like that. I didn't see any, I didn't have a scope on it or anything like that either, but that's my assumption. The boring resolution, I did what you said. I was like, well, I should probably not use the source measure unit. I made sure the active load was off when I wired it all back up to my boring mini power supply. And everything was hunky-dory. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. It's weird though, right? I mean, like,
I have seen such things happen before. So yeah, it's
tell me more about the active load thing. So is it the control algorithm on the active load or is it the power supply?
The control algorithm on the active load. Uh-huh. And if it beats, because it has a certain loop time, right? Yeah, so it's got a certain loop response time. And if that somehow beats, we're talking like a resonance kind of thing. If that beats with the response time of your power supply in constant current mode, then you can cause the, if it's a poorly designed power supply, it can just get caught up its own clacker and it can blow the output FETs.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not a pleasant thing. Try hooking up it'll cause both of them to hiccup, right? Because the electronic load goes into constant current mode. So the power supply goes into constant current mode and then the load goes into a constant resistance mode, but then the constant current mode drops the voltage, which then causes the load to go back up and they start fighting each other and boom,
That's another thing I remember from my Keithley days, which is rapidly in my rearview mirror. I do remember when people would be testing solar cells with source measure units that capacitance of the cells would throw off the control algorithm really heavily, just because it's you're dumping current into this thing and it's just like the voltage isn't moving, but the source measure unit expects it to be moving, that sort of thing. So you had to like just slow everything down as much as possible. Mm.
Yep.
Control algorithms.
Big problems. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's a big deal.
Yeah. I think the source measure was the bad idea. Yeah. The power supply probably should have started with that.
It's too smart for its own good. You would, you used equipment that's too good for the job.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Maybe that could be the name of today's episode.
Too good of equipment. Too good for the job.
Just call it too good for the job.
Too good for the job. Yeah. That sounds good.
There you go.
The other thing I was wondering is having an active load already turned on, is that problematic as well? I actually didn't know. I don't use my active load that often, if I'm being honest. I use it when I get into stuff like this, but like I'm never doing like battery testing like you do.
Yep.
So like
the load can certainly is going to do what it takes based on the input, the supplied input voltage. So it's got a so if that input voltage is varying, then the load's going to vary. Then the load's going to try to do its thing with its own response time. And then if the two don't agree, then you can get stuff like your blowing up thing or a blowing up bench power supply or something else. No, it's not good. You definitely don't want to be ramping them both up at the same time.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So, can cause a real problem. And that's the problem with, control loop based loads. This is why, a lot of people have a direct resistive load because it's the only way to ensure that you aren't causing a hiccup in your the source. So.
Right.
Got to have a pure resistive load. So can make a big deal.
All right. Well, you had a segue. So what's the segue?
The segue is my latest video that I just released this morning. I needed to measure the battery consumption. I needed to measure the current consumption of my BM786 meter, right? Which is in the order of 5 milliamps, right? But I wanted to measure it with some sort of precision, right? But every power supply I've got in the lab is like 1 milliamp is the best it can do, right? like you can't even measure 1.1 milliamps, right? It's 1 milliamp, right? Because their power supplies are always designed for like the maximum current. You know, they're like a 5 amp power supply or a 10 amp power supply, right? So you never get microamp resolution on your power supply.
So what about something like a Koitek or a Joule scope or something like that?
Oh, yes. You can use those specialized tools, of course, right? But I'm talking like a regular bench power supply. And like, but I did actually remember that I did have one. I had a Rohde & Schwarz NGA100, which is not to be confused with the NGE100, which I've also got, which doesn't have this capability. But the NGA that I've got, I think I'm getting that correctly. We can put a link down below. But I've done a review video on this and teardown in that it has 1 microamp resolution on its actual current display. So it can actually scale. It can either auto range its current display, or you can manually fix it to like on. So on the 200 milliamp current range, you can get 1 microamp current resolution on the display, which is fantastic, right? But why don't other power supplies do this? Like, you know, hardly, virtually none on the market, like have any sort of current ranging.
Even like higher end ones.
Even the higher, well, this one's fairly high end, you know. It's $1,000 power supply, you know. It's like, you know, it's in.
What were some of the other ones that you looked at that you didn't have that? Because I found like the, you know, like the Regals and stuff like that.
Even the same price one from Rohde & Schwarz is just happens to be a totally different model. It doesn't have this capability. It's like it's a niche requirement. I've got a top of the range Rohde & Schwarz one, right? Absolute top of the range. I'm staring at it right now. It's on. It's only got 1 milliamp resolution. It's their top of the range, big 4-channel. Jobby, right? Touchscreen, the whole works. And
And you're saying the measure output of like the actual or the like actual the programmable
output current. No, the output current.
Okay.
The output. Well
what both. About like a source measure? Right. Like also could I know we're talking about that.
I thought, oh no, I'm gonna have to use my Keithley source measure unit. Yeah. Right? I've got one. I've got a 2000,
you got the
right?
fancy ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the old school. Fancy one.
You have the old school one. I thought you were at one of the new ones. I thought you were.
No, I don't have one of the new touchscreen source machines.
Ben has one? Ben Krasno has one?
I think he does.
Ben has those.
Yes, I think he does. Okay. I don't have one. I've got the old vacuum fluorescent display one, but like try and drive that thing. Oh my God. Try and just figure out how to turn the, you know, to how to set the output current on the thing.
I've been indoctrinated, so I know how to do it. But it still gets confusing sometimes.
It's nuts. But I'm just like, most power supplies don't bother. It's like, well, if you want to measure low currents like microamps, well, you need a specialized tool for that, you know. It's like, I don't know, why can't a trend be set where like even low-cost power supplies have an adjustable range, you know, thing? I can understand not having auto range and stuff like that, but, you know, you could add for a couple of bucks more, you can add a relay in there and another higher value current shunt resistor and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess they don't want to switch through the different, they want to basically have like a DAC that goes to a driver circuit that just
turns
on the amplifier or that drives
the amplifier.
And there's
a 0.1 output current ohm shunt resistor, and that's it. And then, you can whack a 12-bit ADC on there or a 16-bit jobby or something, and you can get decent resolution, but you can't get microamps because your current shunt's optimized for the 10-amp range.
That's right. Yeah.
They just don't have a secondary current shunt, a higher value current shunt resistor.
Yeah, and probably how they also do product split too, right? So like if they're like, well, anyone who wants to go and figure out super low current is going to go and do that with something like a, you know, a battery monitor, like a high dynamic range type thing, like a Joule scope, right? Yep.
Or they're going to use my microcurrent, or they're just going to use their multimeter, right? They're just going to put their multimeter on the output.
Right, and then you get some ranging, yeah.
Yeah, and that was part of my video I released today. Okay. But then you can get into the burden voltage thing because it's outside of the control loop of the power supply, right? When your shunt resistor is inside the control loop, as you get with the power supply, then if it says 4.500 volts on the output, that's what you get. Right.
Right.
But if your current meters, if you're using a multimeter to measure the output current, then the voltage going to your load
track the drop.
Is not. Yeah. You've got that.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. Have that drop. So, yeah. There you go. Anyway, so
you know, if it was easy, Dave, then everyone would do it. You know,
I know. If it was easy,
now
anyway,
you have that knowledge.
I just think this meter's cool. I just think this power supply is cool because it has that capability.
That is, it's neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably, you think it's worth paying for it? I think that's really what it comes down to.
Oh, it's nice. Yeah. I think it's really nice. You don't have to dick around, right? You can just choose a lower current range.
What's the premium for it, do you think? Like, what's your estimate on the premium to add something like this?
In terms of build cost? It's...
Yeah. No, if you compared this, so you said like the NGA 100 and NGE 100 or something, if they're similar except for this feature, is like $500?
They're basically the same cost. I do believe that they're the same cost, but they're just designed for different markets.
Got it.
So the one I've got is actually a dual channel 100 volt high voltage supply, right?
Yeah.
But it happens to be designed for this kind of, in fact, here's such as creating Internet of Things low power designs. You know, it's one of its like banner highlight. I just sent you a link, right?
Nobody does that anymore, Dave.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's just, it's actually designed kind of more for this purpose, right?
Mm.
So it's not really, you know, a general purpose power supply. It's more, you know, it's a little bit more niche.
Yeah. Yep.
But I can't see why, you know, or like a bunch of low cost power suppliers can't have. I don't know. Leave it in the comments down below if you know of a.
Yeah.
I don't know of a low current, like a low cost, because you know, low cost. Oh, how flooded is the market with low cost power supplies, right?
That's
right.
Right. True race to the bottom.
Mind. Oh, it's an absolute race to the bottom, right? You can get some amazing stuff.
Have I ever told you the name on my cheapo Amazon special?
No.
Dr. Meter.
Dr. Meter. I thought it was going to be Shitto or something.
Yeah, something like that. That's good too. I like that.
Right. Yeah. It's the Shitto power supply, you know. Yeah.
I should print a label for on top of it.
Yeah. Smith, I was talking to Dick Smith. He was giving a talk. It's on my channel somewhere, but it was afterwards. Mm-hmm. He was talking to, I think it is in the video. Anyway, he used to sell power supplies under his companies, right? And his face was on the front, you know, the dickhead logo. And he said, I thought about selling this power supply and I was going to call it the Mighty Dick.
the jokes are endless.
The Mighty, you know, because he actually played up on the Dick name, So,
that's
going to call it the Mighty classic. Dick power supply. I think he said, he put, like, he wanted them to label, like, that was the plan. And then the power supplies came back and they weren't called that. Like, he
instructed changed without them. Him knowing.
They changed it for some reason. I don't know.
Insurrection,
right. Yeah. So,
heads rolled at that company, you know.
So he was kind of upset that they didn't call it the Mighty Dick, you know. Yeah, it's this big, big power supply. Oh, and anyway.
Speaking of product stuff, I had two things that I've worked on be released in the past week.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. One, actually, I was going to send you because we've talked about it offline.
Oh, you're going to send in the mailbag, huh?
No. I'm going to send you a link right now. I'm not going to send you a mailbag. That takes forever. And you barely do mailbag anymore. Sorry, Dave. No offense.
I'm editing one right now.
I don't have time for that. You know, this isn't a publicly available. So this is just a thing that I told you about with the backlit LEDs. We talked about on the show last week, too.
Oh, okay. You sent me a link.
Yeah, so that's sort of released in that it's that. But the bigger one is actually that I helped on the Beagle Connect, which is a Beagle Board project. Beagle Board, if people don't remember, they make the Beagle Bone Black and the Beagle Board and I don't know what else is out there. The what do they call it? The Beagle Pocket Beagle.
No idea.
Basically, little Linux computers that were similar to, you know, kind of in the same echelon as Raspberry Pi. A little bit more expensive,
It was all the rage 8 years ago or something. And
that's right.
Exactly. I do like your use of Hotsnot.
Oh, thank you. On the screen.
Yeah, on the screen there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That one actually was my coworker, I believe, with the Hotsnot.
Oh, right.
Where is the Hotsnot? That's my coworker did that. Mine was actually much.
And two bodge wires, nice.
Oh, yeah. Turns out I2C and I2C1 and I2C2 are different pins, and we'll figure that out later. Yeah. So.
You're a fan of the enamel coated wire, are you?
No, again, that's Mike. That Mike did that, my coworker.
Right.
So.
Okay.
I use it sometimes, but on the ones when I did the bodge, I was just using normal plastic coated wire. So.
Yep. Sweet.
Yeah, nice little. That's the, so Dave's talking about the backlit board, the front panel one with the
front e-ink. Panel. Yep.
So that's the one that we talked about in the show last week. That is, mm-hmm. there's now a post about it. So if people want to check that out. The other one though is the announcement on the Reddit is actually about a different board. Beagle Board just put out the Beagle Play, which is a $99 industrial SBC with a bunch of inputs and outputs and stuff on there. But the thing that matters on that one is the CC1352P7 that has Bluetooth chip. It's got 2.4 gigahertz and 900 megahertz. And that's the same chip that is on the Beagle Connect, which is a board that I helped prototype in early stages in my consulting days. And basically it's like a double-sided click header, the MicroBus click headers plug into that. And you can basically, and then it basically uses something called Graybus, and it can talk back over Graybus to something like this Beagle Play. And you can kind of make a wireless network that kind of self heals and forms, which is pretty cool. So
nice.
So that's out now. And I think Jason, we've had on the show before, will be at Embedded World also showing this off. So you can find him floating around there and talk to him and check this thing out. So that's pretty cool.
Excellent. And I see that Unmanaged 615 put a link to the new Arduino Giga. Is Arduino doomed? Who did this video? Blueprint Internet of Things. Don't know them. They've only got 300 subs.
Yeah, I've never heard of it either. Right. So the Giga is like a, basically they took the Portenta X7.
I have no idea what a Portenta is.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe like, I don't know. I'm guessing it's Italian. That's got like this incredibly beefy processor on it. It's got like a Cortex M7, Cortex, maybe an H7 even. It's like very, 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 very powerful for what it is. Like five 500 megahertz plus kind of processor. And now they took that, which had a different form factor that they, with like kind of like a fine pitch breakouts. And now they basically took that and put it into a 0.1 inch header form factor, similar to the Mega, which if you don't know is one of the other classic Arduino form factors.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, but they're saying the Arduino is doomed because this new Arduino Giga, like the traditional Arduino is doomed because the traditional Arduino Mega, I guess, is like 68 euros and this new thing's only 60 euros and it's just no contest. This thing is 1.5 gig speed wise.
1.5 gig. Oh, wow.
And it's got USB-C. It's got four USB-A's. It's got, it's just nuts. It's got 75 digital lines. It looks like it's not pin compatible with the existing Arduino footprint, though. So it's more like a Raspberry Pi form factor.
I think that's the price they're actually comparing.
That is the Raspberry Pi. There's a Raspberry Pi logo on it. Sorry, I'm not watching this video.
That's okay.
Properly.
Yeah, I think.
What the heck?
I don't think this video is okay. I don't know. Like it's just another variation here. So I don't think it's. I don't know. It's just another.
It's just another dev board comparison. Dev board comparison video. Yeah. All right, scratch that.
Here's what I usually get down to though. Like, okay, so this is like. So I think that the reason that they did this Giga, is that you see, things like the Mega, which is the form factor, being used in things like 3D printers, using basically as like aftermarket components, and then they just kind of plug in, they build shields for the top of the Mega, and then they plug those in, and those got like motor drivers and things like that for 3D printers. For that, I could actually see this being like a very smart upgrade. Right now you upgrade it, you've got a ton more processing power, you've got networking and all the other stuff there. For just like a, you know, just flashing LED, like what is the smallest thing you can get here? I don't know, like a little ESP32 board, like okay, fine, you know, like it really just depends on what the application is. There's so much stuff there. Like, and it also like, I've always even thought like that, you know, I love the Teensy. The Teensy is another one that was like super, super duper powerful thing, but then still running, usually still being programmed through the Arduino IDE. And like, and then Paul and his team, like, you know, they do a custom interface layer to make it so that you can write something in our Arduino IDE and then it will like load itself down into this really powerful part. And for some people that makes a lot of sense, but it's sometimes also like there's so much horsepower being put at like tasks that could be optimized in code.
Exactly. Yep.
And you know, like other things, like don't get me wrong, other things that the Teensy does, it's outside of the Arduino ecosystem, like things like the audio processing is amazing. But again, it's like so much power now with like such a simple interface. It's I don't know a good analogy. I don't have a good analogy on hand, but like there's a lot of different options out there, I guess. And this is now another one. Is that a fair statement? I've never had
options before. Right, I'm so excited by all these new options that we've never had before. Wow.
Yeah, you know, like
I'm going internally berserk.
I think the thing is, most people who are using this form factor are not going to use it at the beginning. The ones who already are using this form factor and want to upgrade it are going to benefit greatly. And everybody else is just going to be like, okay, there it is. So,
yeah,
cool. It's nice it's out there. Hi.
All right. Have you seen the new Linus Tech Tips testing lab video?
No. Is that...
Oh, my God.
He's got a new facility?
Yeah, that's the new testing facility, which we have talked about before, I'm sure.
Yeah, I remember we talked about it. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
It's still not set up. Like, it's this giant warehouse. Like, it's an absolutely enormous warehouse. I'm not sure how many square foot or square meters it is, but it's just insanely big. And they're just installing... They've got a new RF anechoic chamber, which is still in boxes. They haven't set it up. Then they've got that automated power supply test rack, which still haven't got that working. Then they've got a submersion tank. They've got this automated robot keyboard tester thing. So it, you know, the little finger goes around, it automatically presses all the keys so that they can test keyboards. And they've got, what is it? Oh God. They're going to have an audio room where they have got a new RF acoustic test chamber, which is like $500,000 or something. They've got an acoustic test chamber as well, a giant big walk-in one. Then they're going to have a home theater testing room, which is another anechoic chamber just for like home theater gear. And then they've got one of these 3D printers, which is so proprietary, a Rapidia.
Never heard of it.
Rapidia, 3D metal printer. And apparently they can't tell you how it works because they're under NDA not to tell anyone how it, like, show them the exact mechanism inside how it works or something. But it can 3D print, like, giant metal cases and stuff. Like, you know. So they're going to use it to actually design their own fan blades out of metal, right? So they're going to do their own custom cooling fan blades and, you know, wankery like that. Right, it's just absolutely incredible.
It seems like a big swing. That's a big swing.
Oh, it's like millions and millions of dollars are going into this.
Yeah.
Yes, and they're hired people who are dedicated, you know, RF experts, dedicated acoustics.
Yeah, that part makes sense.
Dedicated power supply experts, you know. Yeah. And it's like, it's just crazy. I haven't finished watching it all yet.
I'm more of a rent before I buy kind of thing, so.
I don't know if they're renting this facility or whether or not they bought this gigantic warehouse. I'm not sure what the deal is.
Yeah, leasing is often part of it.
Wow.
Actually, one of my, where I used to work, M-Hub out of Chicago, I hadn't realized. I thought they owned the building that I used to work in. Oh, right.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know if you remember like a tour. I don't know if I ever sent a tour to you, but it was like this 60,000 square foot. So like, what do you divide by 100? It's like 600 square meter.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
Huge facility.
Yeah.
And they got booted.
Oh, wow.
I think because, you know, it's basically a whole city block.
Right.
And that part of town in Chicago is like just condo heaven.
So it's being gentrified, is it? Is that
I mean, it was like kind of this quasi, that is a term. I'm not sure. Totally a term. Yes. Right. Especially my town. Yeah. And I think it's just like, you know, more lucrative to knock it all down and build a huge tower to go up.
Yeah.
So anyways, they're moving to a new spot kind of further outside of town. And now they actually own the building. So that's very exciting.
Ah, yes.
So, if you're a Chicagoan, check out the new M-Hub.
They've learned their lesson. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
This reminds me, Fran Blanche, former guest on the show several times, I think.
And future, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And she did a video recently. I'll see if I can find it. Because she does things where she reports in the newspaper, like she reads the actual newspaper, like the physical newspaper, and she does like stories from the newspaper. It's really, you know, it's actually really good.
Yeah.
And she reported on how how in US states they want to now bring back the work cohabitation space, like the work-life space or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, I can't remember
because that's what
word
Fran always tries to do.
Yes, she wants to hire these terms. And she was basically in her city of Philadelphia, right? Downtown Philly. She can't get a place that's where we can both live and work in the same place.
Usually you have to squat. You have to like lie and then like just surreptitiously live there if you're going to try and do that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you can't like officially do it. And they're knocking down all the original places in Philly mm-hmm. that were these, you know, live workplaces, you know, like mm-hmm. these giant artist creative, you know, spaces, you know, that you lived in there and you worked in your studio, you know, they don't have them anymore.
Yeah.
But apparently they're now, well, they say that they want to bring them back, but she's not really believing it. But, you know, the government's going, oh, we need to bring back the work, live work space again because we knocked them all down and sorry, but not sorry, you know, that we did.
Right. Well, I feel like those are always in like old, like rehabbed.
They use old rehab buildings, you know, they're an old hospital or something and then they became.
Yeah, right.
Yep, and artistic space. Yeah.
Another one that I used to go to, Artisans Asylum, I think. That was like a Boston, it was before MHA, but it was like really cool space. Kind of, it was like a, it was a workspace mostly where you actually rented kind of like a 10 by 10.
A room. You can actually, that's what Fran's.
It was open.
Oh, like an open plan. I think Fran rents like a room in a place like that. Yeah. That's her little mini factory where she has a lathe and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I feel like, you know, especially, I mean, U.S. cities are changing again and they're very price. I mean, you know, in Sydney, Sydney's no stranger to increasing square footage costs. So, it's tough when you want to live like somewhere that's actually accessible, but have enough space to do industrial style stuff. Yeah.
Well, I've been priced out of the lab market here, you know, the office market. Here, like if I want to buy a bigger space, I, you know, it's 800,000, $1 million. Like if I want to get like a 100 square meter place, we're talking $1 million, right? Oof. So, you know, it's nuts.
Click those ad, folks. Dave needs a new space. He's going to get a new space and ad.
If I want a window, I've got to pay $1 million.
That's right.
But it's but of course, you know, you're paying for the convenience. I could go out west, so I could like drive, you know, 15
go west, young man.
Minutes, you know, and like I could go into the poorer working class, you know, areas, and and I can get like quite a big warehouse for maybe half that cost, right? Yeah. But still, you know, it's like,
I've talked to people about this before because they, you know, like they're always like, well, I want to like, you know, I'm young, I want to live in a city, but I want to, you know, work in an engineering job. And it's like, unfortunately, a lot of like hardware engineering jobs, you need space. I've mentioned this on the show before, right? You just need, and like that's municipalities that are geared up for industrial style things are like, you're going to be in Solon, Ohio. You're not going to be in hip, cool downtown Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, it aren't even the big, like, you know, the huge campuses like, you know, HP and Apple and all that sort of stuff. They're like in like more suburban areas, aren't they? Like,
so Apple's they're coming to my part of the world, and they're building a new campus here. As like a contrast, Google is buying a bunch of office space in like downtown Durham. Apple is building a suburban campus like out off of a highway in Raleigh, basically. So like still drivable, so totally accessible.
But it's not near anything. It's not like walking, it's driving. You have to drive there.
You got
to
drive. Right. Or maybe you'll get a bus, right?
That's the big thing. They'll actually bus you in from,
So I think it's just, you know, it's just how the different companies operate. And not like Apple's manufacturing and hardware in Raleigh, North Carolina, but.
But they still know. But they, all this work from home stuff is ending, you know.
I know, right?
Companies
snapped right back.
Elon Musk
set the door shut in people's faces.
It was like, oh, Elon can get away with it. All right, everyone back. We're not putting up with this crap anymore, you know. that really turned on a dime.
It shouldn't have shocked me. I think you said it. I said it. Like, this is going to go right back. But like the speed that it went back.
The speed. Yeah. Really, once somebody really sets a precedence, and then right. you're not considered a bad company if you do it right. It requires one company to take the bad rep first. Yeah. But once they do it, it's like it becomes.
Elon is
doing
that on multiple fronts. So yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's true. It's true. It sucks. But, you know, like, hardware is a tough thing to do remote anyways. Only really, really great engineers like myself can do it. So
right.
me and my friends at FedEx, UPS, and DHL.
DHL. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I will give a life pro tip. I don't know if you, I'm sure you know this too. If you don't know, if you are working remote and you have to ship stuff all over the place, for $9 a month, I use a thing called ShipStation, which is just like a shipping server. It's like a shipping backend for, like, if, you know, like, Dave has an online shop, and like, say Dave wants to give his packing and shipping person access to something like the store, but he wants to just tell him, like, hey, you have 100 orders, click through them, here's all the shipping stuff. Well, you can just buy that as like a pleb like myself for like $10 a month. And then you get access to, like, I get overnight shipping from like here to California for like $40 because they have like their crazy. Yeah, it's insane.
I don't think there's anything like that here. I've got my online shipping software and stuff like that, but that doesn't get me a shipping deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a direct contract with DHL.
Right.
I've got a direct business contract.
Yeah, so in this case,
that is totally independent of the shipping system service that I use.
That's right, right. So, and then that's the thing, because it's always like when you're shipping stuff, it's always about volume, right? And that's why they want direct contracts. But for some reason, ShipStation allowed like their users to get in on their kind of like they're aggregating all the deals, all the people
bulk
are shipping.
Deal. They've got the bulk deal, and you can siphon off that.
UPS and USPS through that is like the cheapest I've ever seen it. And like I said, $40 to get it across overnight in the US.
As far as I'm aware, that's not here in Australia.
Yeah.
Please leave it in the comments if you know.
Yeah.
Please let us know. But I don't think that's a thing here.
Right.
You can contract companies to do it, but they will want volume, right? They will want, how many products do you ship? Okay, we can pack them and ship them for you, et cetera, blah, 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 right?
Yep.
But you can't just use their service. So you're saying that you can use their service, like you pack it and ship it yourself, but you're using their shipping system to get the rates and the deals.
That's
and
right.
then the FedEx dude just turns up to your house and actually picks it up.
That's right.
Right.
Well, so it's like their UPS, it's like their UPS account, and they have a bunch of like aggregated like volume. And so I pay ShipStation, and then ShipStation says, okay, well, I'm going to issue, because they have like the APIs tied in, so that like they can issue me that thing. So the only downside is like if I needed to go and like change stuff, I can go and void stuff through there. Yep. But
you don't have to drop it off at their facility.
No, I can drop it off at UPS. I don't have a pickup, like a regular pickup here, so you could schedule a pickup, and that usually charges. But like for UPS, I just go drop it off.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Like, you know, like you can do like a one-off with FedEx and everything else. You can go on their website, but it costs a fortune, you know.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
It's just, silly, right?
Yep.
It's just nuts. Yep. Yeah. Yes, you have to get that corporate, that sweet corporate deal.
If you get that sweet deal, right? I mean, it's like the same thing. Like, so like at least in the US, DigiKey overnight is like $30, UPS or FedEx. And that's like, you know, like not first thing in the morning is like $99. I think for, again, like by 10 a.m., it's like $30. But like that's cheap. Yeah. That's even cheaper than what I get. No, right? That's like DigiKey because they have crazy volume. And like you really said, that's like negotiated stuff.
Yeah. It's nuts.
I used to think that was a lot of money, but then cost of not having your parts?
Once you try and go and cost it yourself, no, it's not.
Yeah, no. Well, I just mean like the cost of like having, you know, just the cost of logistics and like having stuff there. Like, how much does it cost for your like your coworker not to have the board in their hands the next morning?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing is
exactly.
Like that is
absolutely
incalculable,
priceless.
But high.
It's
cost.
Worth like even $1,000, right?
Exactly.
If you're talking about someone's rates at hundreds of dollars an hour, if they're sitting there twiddling their freaking thumbs for a whole day, right?
That's exactly right.
You've just blown $1,000, right? So you're better off. You're actually better off paying $500 for the shipping and getting it there earlier.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I didn't realize Another one that's interesting, I learned this on the consulting forum, that all of the commercial airlines, you can sign up. So like Southwest is like a commercial airline in the US, right? I fly them for vacations and whatever. But you can like walk up to the, if you have an account, you can walk up to the counter and you can just ship stuff to the other airports, right? So like say you were in San Jose and I'm like,
so someone can come and actually pick it up. So they just leave it there it just goes around on the carousel or something, does it? What is it in the back?
No, they have like a cargo office. There's a cargo office.
Okay, pick up. Okay.
Yeah, they all have cargo offices basically and you just sign up with them. But like we're talking like it can get there in like hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it'll get on earlier flights than the next day. Yeah. And you can start to do, it's like, wow. I was really surprised by it. Yeah. It's
cool. If you're sending something one-off, that's really expensive and somebody is happy to go to the airport to pick it up. You know, like
we came full circle in this one, right? You could ship your artisanal crystals.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
if you trusted their handling, you could ship your artisanal crystals. yeah. That's really, really interesting. And like super, super casual with like, not super casual. It was super easy to get signed up on like all of the airline sites. So,
right.
And again, if you're in a bind and you need to get something there super fast, that's not a bad option. Yeah. They fly a lot. So
that's wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that maybe it exists here, but I've never looked for it. I've never searched for it.
Cargo stuff. I mean, like it would be, so like getting out of Australia, I'm sure it'd be expensive, Qantas like flies
cargo
everywhere.
Service, right?
So like, say like Qantas, say if you can fly, air ship freighting. Something from like
freight.
Sydney
freight,
to
Qantas.
Dallas.
Com. Freight, yeah, Qantas.com. Okay. Yeah.
That's a huge part of their business too.
Wait, up to including 50 kilograms acceptance, pre-screen flight, 45 minutes before. Collection, Go Express, freight accepted before 10 a.m. will be collected. Yep. 2-day service, book now. Book in. Yeah. I can book it, yes. Okay, yeah. It looks like it exists.
It's like you're buying a very, very tiny seat on the plane.
Yes, well, an unpressurized seat on the plane.
No, actually, I learned that. Did you know that the hold is pressurized?
Is it?
Yeah, I learned this because I was like, well, you ever seen like dogs?
Yes, they send them in the cages. Yeah, but I thought they had another area for that.
No.
Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah, the hold's pressurized.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think I could be wrong. I thought there was Wendover does that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
And he has another one about cargo because the cargo's, I forget, it was like during pandemic times when all the flights got canceled, all the cargo got canceled too, right? That was a huge problem where like they lean on commercial airlines for cargo all the time. I'll link that one in, you know. I love Wendover Productions, but like just how the volume dropped off. And so that became, that added into part of the supply chain mess that is finally shaking loose. We haven't talked about that in a while.
I have a price for you. I've got a price for you. To ship a 20 kilo box, which is 50 centimeters by 50 by 50 from Sydney to Melbourne, the economical is $116.
How fast will they get there?
My DHL would be cheaper than that, I think. But the convenient price is, wait for it, $229. And the fastest is Go Priority at $449. But still, if you need it, you know, if you need to get it.
I mean, it's like the cost of a flight without having to get on the flight.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there you go. It simply exists. And I assume you just, you turn up to the, I don't know, there's a freight counter somewhere. Here's my thing with your label, with your pre-done label on it.
If you pay attention, next time you go to the airport, like you'll see signs for like the freight.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Moldings.
Yeah.
They're usually off the, you know, they're not in the main like arrivals, departures type of thing. But like,
totally different area. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Now you know. Yeah. Dave, you can ship me a large birthday cake at my birthday.
Right. How about that? I totally knew you could do it, but I didn't know that the airlines did it like straight on their website here. Yeah. There it is. Just
right.
I'm assuming I can just press go and I book it. I put in my credit card number and it prints me out a barcode label, which I stick on the box. And then I've got to drive all the way to Sydney Airport, you know.
Sure, sure. In the US, you have to be pre-approved, I think, because
Right.
Do like background check type stuff.
Oh, yeah, because then everyone would just ship a tick-in crystal, a tick-in artisanal crystal.
Right. Tick-tock.
Tick-tock to the guy with the submachine gun. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Bad idea.
Oh boy, seemed like a good idea at the time. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of other links on. I haven't read any of the links. I've been a little heads down lately.
Yep. Sorry to unmanage 615. He's put all the links on here.
I know. So
and people have upvoted them. You know.
Yeah.
There's a new Raspberry Pi global shutter camera.
Yeah, I saw Jeff Geerling did a video about that. Yeah.
There's a new module for those who want to do high speed photography or anything. You know, if you use a regular camera, they're crap because they've got a rolling shutter. So, you know.
That's right. That's right.
That's why if you're at the airport, segue, do a tie-in. If you film the propeller on a plane, it appears like it's all just chopped up or it's going backwards. Yeah. It appears like it's going backwards because that's your rolling shutter on your camera. You know? Yep. Yeah.
I thought the going backwards was the frame rate stuff. I thought the rolling shutter was like the making it look like a bendy.
Oh, it's a combo. It all ties in. Yeah. I think Smarter Every Day has done an excellent explainer video on it way back.
Yeah.
So, is it the end of Philips? There's a link here. It's the death of Europe's largest electronics giant. And I think it's Philips they're talking about.
The king is dead. Long live the king, NXP. Philips is NXP, right? And that's wasn't there another one in between?
Oh God, I don't know. I kind of groaned when it was Fluke Philips. You know,
Fluke Philips. Oh, I never knew that one.
Oh, what? You've never used a combination branded Fluke / Philips instrument.
No.
Oh no, God, you've never.
It was like a rebadge.
No, it's like Fluke bought like the Philips Test and Measurement division, and then for years, I don't know how long, they actually co-branded them Fluke Philips.
Interesting. And, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
Mm. There you go. I've got a Fluke Philips. I think it's a Fluke Philips scope here, or is it just? I'm gonna have to go check now.
Yeah. Oh, like live? Oh wow. There he goes. I was thinking of NXP.
No, it's just a Fluke combi scope. It's just a Fluke branded, but it was Fluke Philips branded, so I must have a newer one. That's, you know.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking of, so they sold some of the stuff became NXP, but then some of the stuff out of that, I think the active silicon portfolio became Nexperia. It's just like, you know.
They should just pay us
to come up with these names. Yeah, it's silly.
I'm still waiting for Keysight to change their name again.
Yeah, they should. They're about on time, right?
They're about on time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I wouldn't really be sad if Keysight changed their name. It was like Keysight, corporate wankery name. Everyone groaned when they did.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Including on the show. Yep.
Yeah. Multiple times. Yeah. Oh boy. Anyway.
Well, I am off to Embedded World. So I will be out next week. Dave may be able to find someone to go on the show. It'll be fun.
I will do my best. All right.
I will be at events. If people hear this and you're like, hey, I didn't hear the last show, but now I'm wondering if Chris is going to be there. I'll be at IoT Stars on Tuesday night and PCB Arts Meetup on Wednesday night. Thursday night, I'll be driving around the Nuremberg area and I have no idea what I'm doing. So. Give me a shout.
Doof, 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 doof. He's driving around with his, you know.
Flat tire? It sounds like a flat tire.
Oh, boy.
Or my giant bag of swag that I've gotten from the conference. That also could be it. Right, yes. Yeah, just drag it on the floor. Yeah.
Oh, have fun.
Thanks.
Have a good trip.
Talk to you soon.
Catch you next time.